fingers crossed.
Good morning.
Everybody knows.
This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B. And today is Wednesday, October 17th. And once again, I want to wish happy birthday to my friends Chelsea and Gail Andrews. And just, like I said, I hope you guys have a great day, and I hope it's the best year ever for you. Anyway, our guest today is Vinny Eastwood. And Vinny, you're a talk show radio host out of New Zealand. And you are, what, the number one talk show host in the whole country down there, right?
Well, let me put it this way. Can you name another New Zealand talk radio show host that you've ever heard of in your life?
Point well taken. Point well taken. So anyway, you're kind of setting the world on fire in a lot of ways, and your popularity is growing. It's expanding globally, and what do you attribute your unique success to? Because, like you said, New Zealand is not known for its talk show radio host.
Well, New Zealand's known for its sheep, in fact, ironically enough. see. And I just touched on it right there. That's why, because I can make you laugh. All right, you know, any guest that I've got on, bar a couple of them, that you are guaranteed, if you're a guest on my show, that you will laugh. Now, is there any other show in the world that you can think of where you can make that kind of guarantee?
Not that I can think of. I'm pretty dry and sober. You know, I try to keep it straight up. I try to make it informative. But I look at the, you know, let's do a little compare and contrast between the U.S. And New Zealand. And in the U.S., we're looking at some pretty dire circumstances here. I mean, we're, like I said, our economic vitality continues to drain. The police state is breathing down our necks. We've got two lousy choices for our next president. But actually, there are a third and fourth choices, but I'm going to get to that later. But, you know, you look at things, and we are seeing change. We're seeing massive change, but it's not of the positive nature. It's, people, we have this foreclosure crisis. We've got homeless people. We've got the middle class is crushed. The poor are doing worse. 47 million on food. I could go on about all the issues, but,
Okay, well, let me stop you there. Firstly, you mentioned the economy. U.S. economy is throwing TARP bailouts and QE3, QE2, QE infinity, that kind of thing. We're actually doing similar things. In fact, we bailed out our banks during the financial crisis, and we didn't ask for a single share in them. We have a Reserve Bank of New Zealand, and if you go down to the Reserve Bank of New Zealand office, it's just across the road from Parliament down there in Wellington. In New Zealand, and behind the front desk, you walk in, there's a reception area, and behind the front desk, what do you see? Guess. A big, giant red shield on the wall. That's what. What does red shield mean? Rothschild. Right. So we've got the same system. And you talked about how America's got a bit of a police state going on. Well, we just passed this thing called the Search and Surveillance Bill, where the police can now tap your phone, break into your house, install cameras in any room that they want, surveil you for up to 3 days, no warrant, no judicial oversight, and if they don't find anything, they can just pack up their stuff and go, and nobody need know about it, including you, and they can charge you for receiving things in the future. So let's say, for example, they charge you with possession of certain documentation about blah, 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 blah. What they can do is just charge you with it, and if you ain't got none of that documentation, if it ever is sent to you in your mailbox or anything like that, and they find out about it, they'll then arrest you instantly, even if there's nothing for it. So there's that, and you also said about elections, how you got two fake candidates. Well, here's the two main opposition leaders, and this is their background. The main opposition leader is the Labour Party, which is the equivalent of the Democrats, but they're red instead of blue kind of thing. And the guy who's running it is David Shearer, who is married to a Zionist and used to work for the UN, and then just comes into the New Zealand out of nowhere. Nobody knows who he is. And all of a sudden, he's the new head of the party, right? And I know a couple of the other guys who were vying for the top job who've been in there for years and years and years, working really hard in their local communities and their districts and things like that, doing things for them. And they were like, "What? Where did this guy come from?" And the other person, the person who's leading the country right now, is the Prime Minister John Key, who worked on the Federal Reserve, who worked for the Federal Reserve Bank of New York for 2 years as its head of European bond and derivatives trade. He was the representative for Merrill Lynch, who have a stake in the Fed. So that is the two choices that we've got. And he's also incidentally the head of the New Zealand Zionist Society. He's also the head of New Zealand Freemasons. And he's the Prime Minister and the Minister of Tourism, and he has a whole bunch of other portfolios as well. When you get elected as Prime Minister in New Zealand, it's what's referred to as a prime ministerial dictatorship, where you can have a hand-picked, unelected cabinet, right? And sure enough, that's what he does. And he puts in all these globalists, all these people from the World Health Organization, all these people from the World Bank in charge of the new Reserve Bank here in New Zealand and all of that kind of stuff. It's pretty freaking obvious. And you also mentioned the foreclosure crisis in the United States and the homeless problem. Well, in New Zealand, we're one step ahead of you. What we've done is we've paid local community leaders in a suburb called Glen Innes, where it's kind of like low-income housing, but the land that it's on is actually relatively valuable, and it's starting to get built up around it, and they've got all these old state houses that have been there for, like, I don't know, 60, 80-odd years or whatever. They're all paid off, and they're actually a moneymaker for the government. So naturally, the government calls in all the local community leaders, spiritual leaders, Māori groups, community leaders, non-profit organizations, things like that. And they promise to give them a slice of the pie of the community project that's going down to, quote-unquote, refurbish these old homes. Now, if I was to say to you, I'm going to refurbish your home, you'd think, you'd give me a new bathroom, or you'd put some new insulation in the walls or something like that, right? Well, these people all got paid $100 to attend this meeting, Mike, okay? And they got given probably, I've been to a number of meetings similar to this, right, where they give you free alcohol, free food, that kind of thing. And by the time they start telling you, oh, how great it is that they're going to revamp the community, you're more than willing to say, yes, happy, happy, happy. It's exactly like in Nazi Germany where for some reason Hitler had all this money to throw alcohol around. And then he'd come up after everybody's really, really pissed and just start speaking, and everybody be so enthralled because they were drunk. And what happens is, this is how they refurbish the homes. They cut them off their foundations, dump them on a truck, and then sell that house to somebody elsewhere down the country and kick the family that's been in there for 20, 30 years out. And tell them to...
That's a heck of a refurbishment program right there.
Exactly. And just the other day, I think it was like 2 days ago, Hone Harawira, who's leader of one of the smaller, minor opposition parties here in New Zealand, actually parked his car in front of one of these removal trucks to prevent it from, of course, getting take the house away. And he was arrested by the New Zealand police a couple of days ago, and there's a big fanfare about it, and he's coming out. So how many US politicians have actually gotten themselves arrested trying to defend against foreclosures and homelessness?
None that I am aware of. I mean, absolutely none. And that is what so aggravates me, is we can't even get... We know the levels of fraud, the multiple levels of fraud that were committed against the American people, as the people who bought the house, the scam going in, how they were misrepresented on their loans. We know about how when they securitized and bundled these loans, there was fraud committed. We know when they sold the loans as AAA rated to the pension funds that the American people owned, there's fraud committed there, and yet not a single banker has gone to jail, not a single one, and the banks own the country. And you hit the nail on the head when you walk into your Ministry of Finance there, and you see the red shield. That is the problem that drives this world. We need to eliminate those people, the red shield people, all of them. Anybody who's even remotely attached to them have to be removed from any policy office. And one of the things I call for in this show all the time is we need complete regime change. Complete regime change. And it sounds like it's not isolated to the USA, but globally, we need a complete regime change.
Yeah, and you see, as you just brought up all these things, you're intimately aware of the US situation. And I'll just tell you that it's the exact same thing, okay? And it's not like it's slightly similar or something like that. It's the exact same thing. thing, exact same protocol. I can tell you how public meetings run here in New Zealand, and you'll go, oh my God, that's exactly the same way as we run our council meetings in Dallas. I can tell you how we drop poisons, literally the most toxic poison in the world, which was developed for poisoning waterways downstream by the Japanese in the Manchurian campaign in China, called 1080. It's not licensed for outdoor use in any country in the world except New Zealand. And we dump it, and we dump it by I think we spend about $50 million a year dumping thousands of tons of this stuff, bait pellets that are cinnamon flavored and dunked in green dye into water catchment areas and into native bush that and this is also on the borders of farmland, okay, under the proviso that, oh, we've got a possum problem in this country. The only reason we've got a possum problem is because instead of catching all those possums and promoting the fur trade, which is the original reason why these species were introduced here in the first place, they fired all the trappers, thousands of people who were making a living off this fur trade, and just instead start poisoning the waterways, killing off all the local bird life, all the deer, everything. This stuff kills everything.
But what's the purpose behind dumping poisons in the waterways?
That tuberculosis from possums might be the reason why the disease exists in the first place, which is a total lie, which they've got no evidence for. The real reason is to destroy the food supply, mate,
all the native food. Okay, well, I hear our music coming up for our next break, so stick with us, folks. We'll be right back for more compare and contrast with the U.S. and New Zealand. Benny Eastwood from New Zealand. So, Benny, welcome back to the show. And, you know, I have a comment. We don't have anything that egregious going on where they're putting out actual poisons under the canard of poisoning possums. But we've got possums, too. They're not a problem for us. But what we do have here is we've got Monsanto is putting out these genetically modified crops that are cross-pollinating miles away, stuff that they shouldn't even be close to. And we have the problem of Monsanto Roundup. And Monsanto Roundup is proven to produce sterility in males. It doesn't matter if you're a male rabbit, or if you're a male human, or if you're a male cow. It induces sterility, and it impacts the production of sperm. And it's in everything. It's everywhere. It's in our water supplies. It's ubiquitous throughout the United States. And there's no getting around it. We're suffering from a different but very, very similar problem.
Well, you have a look at the New Zealand drinking water standards. And a good friend of mine, Penny Bright, exposed this a while back. In New Zealand drinking water standards, triclifa, which is one of the active ingredients in Roundup, we're allowed 1,000 times more in New Zealand drinking water as they do in the EU drinking water standards. One New Zealander was really concerned about this because his tomatoes were being deformed, that kind of thing. And tomatoes are sort of like the canary in the coal mine of the fruit of the plant world, sort of thing. And as soon as they start deforming, you know that there's something wrong with your soil. And he looked at his kids drinking out of the water fountains and at school and stuff like that, and just freaking out, man. And it's really quite horrible. And speaking of Monsanto, we've now got. Have you had SWAT teams like busting people for growing having raw milk and stuff like that in the Amish community?
It's nobody's
gun drawn reins.
Yes, they walk in armed SWAT teams. You act like these are some kind of dangerous terrorist felons or something, but they're Amish. They don't even believe in violence. You walk up to an Amish guy, punch him in the mouth, and he's just going to get up and walk away. That's the religious. It's so pacifist. There's no need to treat these people this way, but yet our police state closes in even around the Amish, who are no threat to anyone.
Okay. Now, on that note, we have a new legislation coming into New Zealand now, which is remarkably similar to the Codex Alimentarius protocol that we've seen through the UN being implemented everywhere, where it's called the Food Bill. And what was it? How many people died per year in New Zealand due to food-related illnesses? About 6. How many people die from pharmaceutical drug-related reactions? About 6,000. So naturally, they introduce legislation to protect people from food standards. And of course, the people that they're going to be enforcing this are going to be Monsanto employees who will be armed, and they will have immunity from prosecution and require no warrants to enter your property if you're growing so much as a frickin' turnip that you are willing to give away or sell or trade or anything like that. Illegal! And again, attacking the food supply.
Well, they are. They're attacking the food supply, and they're also attacking the water supply. We had recently an incident up in the state of Oregon where a guy was collecting rainwater off of his roof to use on his garden. And he was found in violation of some obscure code, and they sent in a SWAT team. They arrested the guy. They put him in jail for 90 days, held him, charged him, convicted him. He got off with some probation for collecting rainwater off your roof. Come on, give me a break, people. That's a bit severe.
Yeah, exactly. And one of my friends in Hamilton, just down the way here in New Zealand, he runs a radio show called Rush FM, and he asked me to do a piece for him on this particular issue about the capturing of rainwater and all a number of other attacks on the food supply, and just related to the fact that you're not free. You know, you really aren't. Okay, do you have to pay for your water? Yeah. Then you're not freaking free. Do you have to wonder whether or not your food is genetically modified because there ain't laws to properly label it? Yeah? Well, then you're not freaking free. Do you have to worry about food prices going up astronomically day after day because of hyperinflation? Have you noticed the food can shrinking in size, but they're exact same height and they've just got slightly less ingredients in it with the food inflation? Yeah? Then you're not freaking free.
Well, we've been having that's been going on. That's been going on wholesale here, where as food prices go up, they change the shape of the box, they change the size of the can, and they, in very, very tiny print, it's no longer 12 ounces, it's 10.5 ounces. And they're doing this, and they're stealing from you. They're not not lowering the price. The price stays the same. You're getting less material, and they don't tell you. They misinform. It's going on. So I'm just so appalled that this is not isolated to the U.S. This is global. This is every westernized country is undergoing the same thing. And I don't understand the end game other than they want to get rid of us.
Yeah, well, they want a one-world government. And here's the thing. You've got to make people dependent if you want to rule them. And if people can grow their own food, if people have freedom, economically or otherwise, you can't control them. And so you've got to take away those things to make them dependent.
Well, here's our next break. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Stick with us, folks. Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B, and today is Wednesday, October 17th, 2012, and we're on with very special guests from New Zealand, Vinnie Eastwood. And Vinnie, you know, you just brought up a great point. I've had a minute to think about it over the break, and people need to become more self-reliant if they want to be free, not less self-reliant. And it brings me back to this false paradigm. If you remember in the 80s and 90s, how the change in the business schools and what was taught was all about supply chain management, and how no one company does everything. They don't make an entire product anymore, but they subcontract out. They have a component made here and a component made there, and there's this interdependent global supply chain. And what that does is that puts every country vulnerable. No one can defend themselves. No one can be sovereign. No one.
Don't you love the wording they use? We're going to make everybody interdependent, which means they're going to lead every single country into dependence.
Yes, that is the point I was getting to, and this is something that has been pervasive in academia, has pushed this around the world. Every university that has an MBA program now teaches supply chain management as, oh, this is the most wonderful thing. And the other thing that goes hand in hand with it is just-in-time inventory, so that your inventory arrives just when you need it. You don't have to stock a 30-day supply of widgets to build your product. You're going to have widgets delivered every day, and you'll never have any more than a couple hours' worth of widgets on the production floor, which means that your supplier can cut you off at the knees anytime they want, and they can put you out of business if you don't play the game. And that is what they're doing to business. In fact, that's what they've done to business over the last 25 years, and now this is what they're doing to individuals. They're taking it to the next level of granularity, which is the individual, how to make you dependent so you don't have more than a couple hours worth of whatever it is you require for life, whether it's food, whether it's water, whether it's whatever, that you are completely dependent on them for your next feeding, whatever it is. They want you to be 100% obedient, 100% compliant all of the time.
Well, not all forms of slavery involve physical whips and physical manacles. Many are financial and many are psychological. These are the tools of enslavement. Essentially you become I don't know if you've seen the Aaron Russo film about America from freedom to fascism, and the amount of taxation that is being put on the American people, all these different forms of it, you know, land tax, communication tax, cell phone tax, having a vagina tax. You know, there's so many different forms of taxation that you literally are busting your ass all day, every day, just trying to survive. And every time that you come up with just a little bit of spare cash, you're like, oh my God, that's awesome. I might be able to get that new heater or that new refrigerator that I wanted. Boom, another tax bill of some description comes in, and you're back to nothing, right? So
that's
everybody, and that's the supply chain idea right there. Your money is there exactly when you need it, but you got nothing more. And as soon as it stops coming in, you're fracked.
Well, that's the whole issue. And this whole supply chain management issue was developed at the University of Chicago and as part of the Chicago School of Management and Supply. And this is where some of the most insidious, dangerous ideas in the world have come out against freedom. It is from that hotbed of the University of Chicago. And it's really a frightening concept. And you know, it's just, you know, what do we do? I keep telling people on my show every day, I say, there ain't no Superman. We have to do this ourselves. And so, but it's identifying problems is one set of issues, but yet implementing a plan to stop their progress because they're insidious.
Well, see, this is the other element as well. There's so many enslavement mechanisms that are employed that are deployed simultaneously against you. So you've got food enslavement, water enslavement, housing enslavement, financial enslavement, mind enslavement through the media and all of that kind of thing. You've got political enslavement and police enslavement and corruption enslavement and so on and so forth. You know, so everybody the whole world over is trapped to a degree by this web. And I've come up with the idea, it's called the tactic of the cactus. Okay, a cactus protects itself by covering itself in spines that point out in every direction. And for every conspiracy I've ever found, usually within the town or state or village or whatever that conspiracy is taking place, there will always be one person sitting out there who is stabbing out in the dark if necessary to try and expose it. And what I feel is really necessary here is that you've got all these different patriots from all over the world and all these different countries and all these different fields of research. And yet, as radio show hosts, we often have to pick and mix and discern who we bring on our shows and yada, yada, yada. whereas I've only just recently started doing that, and I started off going just flippantly out, and anybody who wanted to come on the show, I'd invite them on for an hour, 2 hours, doesn't matter if they're a huge guest like David Icke or if they're a nobody. I was just doing that. And it's part of this tactic to just give some coverage in the media sense of the word. It's kind of like giving a weapon to somebody. Let's say, for instance, you're charging into the enemy lines and it's like Stalingrad or something and only half the guys have got a rifle. What I'm doing is trying to create a few more rifles and stuff like that to hand out so that a whole bunch of people aren't walking into these situations unarmed, as it were.
Well, you're right, because most people are unarmed. And the whole thing with the U.S., and I'm probably pretty sure it works the same in New Zealand, but correct me if I'm wrong. The whole premise of our constitutional republic we have here is based on an informed consent, informed citizens. And the first thing you have to do to make an informed decision is to be informed. And we have this media that is dominated by the Zionist. And, you know, I'm not going to mention what particular religion the Zionists are, but a lot of them are of the same religion. And there's six major corporate news media out here, and they're all propaganda arms, and they don't give you what the real deal is. That's why radio, like we do, like you do, like I do, when we bring alternative views, we are becoming the new media. They're losing market share. We're gaining market share. And so hopefully our messages are clicking. But how do people make informed decisions when they're only given part of the story, when they're only given part of a segment of the facts, not all of the facts? And I watch how people's minds, their hearts and minds and their beliefs separate fact from belief. That's a big one. But they're so limited in the information they're given to where what appears to be a logical, well-based, informed decision is really an ill-informed decision. And that's something I notice every day.
Well, that's the media's fault. The media were appointed under the Constitution and many other legislations throughout the world as quote-unquote the fourth estate. Okay, so you've got three other estates. I don't know what the hell they are, but the fourth estate is the media, and they're supposed to be the intermediary between the powerful and the influential and the public, who in general don't want power, don't want influence. They simply want to raise their families in peace and have a happy, healthy life. That's what we all want at the end of the day. A bunch of other people in our society don't want that. In fact, they don't want us to have that either. It's like, hey, dude, I'm sorry. I know that you kind of will never really threaten me or anything like that, but the problem is I'm not a god as yet, and the only reason why I'm not a god is because you're still around to challenge my godhood and question me and stuff like that. So I'm just going to implement an agenda incredibly slowly to corrupt your mind, corrupt your beliefs, corrupt your society, corrupt your government, and corrupt all your supply chains of every single kind, so that you become dependent on me, much like a disciple is to a god, right? That's the situation.
You have just touched on both the core element of the Mormon religion, which one of our presidential candidates is, and the core element of what the Masonic movement is. And both of those believe that they, as men, will become better men to the point where they become gods and godlike and have power over all of their domain, which unfortunately is going to be you and I and the rest of us regular schlubs out there.
Yeah. Traditionally, any man who thinks himself a god soon turns into the devil.
Well, we are bedeviled with demons out there, and they're turning themselves into it's getting awful. It's getting awful. That's
well, we're talking literally here in a lot of cases. You know, I've had people on from different places all over the world where they're exposing these massive child kidnapping cults and pedophile cults and goodness knows what kind of thing that are involving the highest level of people. You know, like if you've ever heard of the Holly Gregg case in the UK, for instance.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, this 14-year-old girl with Down syndrome was passed around the elite of her little English village like a bag of Oreos in prison. You know, it was absolutely disgusting, and you can't deal with that. Okay, this is the thing. Child rape. Let me say that again. child rape is satanic in nature, in my opinion. That's why they make a ritual out of it. They love to sacrifice. They love to destroy innocence. And this is really the area of conspiracy research that where many fear to tread, and with good reason. You get what you pay for. You start exposing this particular realm of it, you're going to start hearing about it, man. There's been so many people that I've known just here in New Zealand who are exposing the fact that Child Protective Services here, which we call CIFS, Child Youth and Family Services, the equivalent of the CPS, and similar statistics there, where you are something like five times more likely to be sexually abused in the custody of those people than you would under your own family, okay? This is the situation we're dealing with. It's wholesale, massive bad stuff going on here. I believe in Washington, D.C., on May the 1st every year, it's a satanic holiday, I think. Incidentally, it's May Day, you know, the workers' day. No coincidence. About 3,000 children in the D.C. area just disappear. Well, and every year. And annually... I think it was annually in the United States, there was some thousands, hundreds of thousands even, like 400,000 or something a year, children just
disappear. That was the point I was going to make, is that we have hundreds of thousands of children every year disappear. And this whole thing with seeing kids on milk cartons, we don't have enough milk cartons anymore. There's so many of them disappearing. It is absolutely incredible. And then no one wants to connect that dot. That these children are being abducted, they're being abused sexually, and eventually many of them are being murdered in what really amounts to satanic ritual.
Mm-mm. And some guy came on a radio show on the Satan Network or something. I listened to the broadcast, and he was laughing at the goy, as he called us, that we didn't know that him and all of his other Satanist buddies and stuff like that are not only kidnapping, are not only raping, are not only killing, and not only disposing of these kids, but he claimed that they also had immense connections with the McDonald's Corporation and other meatworking factories and things like that through their business interests, and that's how they get rid of the children. They chuck them in the meat grinders so that when you're chomping down your McDonald's, you're eating your own kid that you saw on the milk carton.
You become a cannibal.
It's like mad cow disease. Now, and I also want to touch on something here as well. Not only does this stuff really go on, but I've found that the people in general that I've brought on the show that go deeply into this research thing, they start getting depressed. They start getting really traumatized. Even if this stuff ain't happening to you, simply being exposed and being aware that it is happening is incredibly traumatic, okay? And these people had to undergo psychological counseling, and their families have been torn apart just doing the research, just doing the activism, even not even being involved. That's
aware
how
of
bad
that
this stuff is.
That level of trauma, even just being exposed to, it's something no one wants to think about or deal with. I've had Kevin Annette on the television, on the radio show here a couple of times, and he talks about what's going on in the Catholic Church and how they are child rapists and how many, many, many of these pedophile child raping priests are on. And everywhere you turn, you see the same thing. This happened in the Bush White House. This is we've got reports of that have come out, that the after hours parties where the select few who are going to be promoted, moved up the food chain, are invited to stay late, and they have these orgies where they pass around young boys, and this is just an awful, awful thing. And somehow we the people need to root out this cancer that's among our society and destroy it.
No pun intended.
Forever.
We need to root it out. No pun intended.
Well, we need to pull it out by the roots, so to speak.
and you know what? It's actually quite difficult to make jokes about this because we appear insensitive. Well, did this? You don't hear about this at all. I'm like, at all. It is the biggest guarded secret of like all time because of the implications, and also because of the horror of it. Most people do not want to hear about it, man. You start telling them about this, and they start attacking you like you're the one doing it.
Well, they do.
and they're well protected. And they've put their people in every bottleneck of authority where there is, so that they've got corrupt in the judicial, in law enforcement, in every administration, everything that you can possibly imagine. They have people placed there, and they control more of our society than we can even imagine.
Well, and this is the another thing I wanted to touch on as well. Things are always worse than you imagine, okay? Imagine how bad it could possibly be. Imagine the worst horror movie that you've ever freaking seen with cults or, like, thousands of dead bodies or stuff like that. Multiply it by a million, and you're nowhere near how bad it truly is, okay? It's so bad that it's incomprehensible. To comprehend how bad it is would literally drive you insane. And this is what happens with a lot of conspiracy theorists I've seen out there, and you've seen this yourself, Mike, no doubt. They start out with all the good intentions. They want to tell people 9/11 is an inside job. They want to save the economy. But what happens is they start going freaking crazy because they've got all this information, all this fear porn, and they've got no coping mechanisms along with it. When you eat a piece of fruit, for instance, it's got a sugary substance in it called fructose, which ordinarily breaks down in the liver as though it is alcohol. When you package it, on the other hand, with the flesh of the fruit, which is fiber, the fructose bonds with the fiber, and your body is then able to process the fruit properly. That is what we have to do now, is we have to package the poison with the cure, just like in nature.
Okay, we'll be right back. We have a break coming up. Stick with us, folks. This is getting interesting. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B, and today is October 17th, 2012, and we're on with very special guest talk show host Vinny Eastwood. And Vinny, you've touched on something here with this whole child disappearance, abduction, child rape issue. There's another even more insidious issue that goes hand in hand with this, and that is when they're done with these children, when they've abused them, when they're tired of them. Oftentimes, they will break them apart and harvest their organs and sell them to the highest bidder. And so you've got people who can get that new liver they want, that new kidney they want. And you've got a nice, healthy, youthful organ to go in some old decrepit guy or girl or woman, and it's going to keep them alive for a long time. And this is another very, very dreadful aspect of this whole problem that these people, I can't even call them people, but these monsters that walk among us have set up and are doing, and it's just such an awful, awful thought about what happens to these poor, innocent children.
Now, the most awful thing about this aspect is, in fact, the enforcement of this law. Okay, so I believe there was a documentary that was going to be coming out on the Discovery Channel in the mid-90s that was blocked a day or so before it was due to go live, that was exposing part of this child trafficking pedophile cult in, I think, Chicago, incidentally. And I've talked to a number of activists who are fighting the child kidnapping of the government kind here in New Zealand. And what I've determined from their testimony is that every person that you could possibly think of to go to for help if your child's been kidnapped is on the take. Okay? First person you go to the doctor, and you say, "Doctor, I was not abusing my child. There were no wounds. There were no nothing. You know, I've changed their nappies every day. I'm a good father." Doctor goes, yeah, but that's okay. Just trust the authorities. Okay, he's on the take. Then you think that the doctor's on the take, so you go to a lawyer or something like that, and the lawyer says, "Oh no, you can't sue the doctor for that. You know, it's not his responsibility and that kind of thing. You really need to trust him and trust the government." Oh my God, he's on the take. So you go to the local cop, local sheriff, or something like that, and you say, "Hey, look, guys, this corrupt a doctor and this corrupt lawyer are conspiring to keep my kid from me for no good reason. I don't know what the heck's going on. And the sheriff will say, well, I'm sorry, there's absolutely nothing I can do. You know, the state authority of CPS has more authority than I do. I can't go get your kids back or anything like that. He's on the take. And then you go to the family court and stuff like that, and you go out to the judge, and you're like, judge, look, there's absolutely no evidence that I was a bad father, no evidence that my child was abused, no evidence that they have any reason whatsoever to come and take my child, who is very young and very pretty and very lovely and very cute and all of these other really nice things. They always seem to pick really nice, well-adjusted, beautiful children, I've found. Those are the ones that they really go after. And then judge just goes, nah, summary judgment, boom, and your kid's now the property of the ward of the state. And then you go to the people who are now taking care of your child in a CPS family foster home or something like that, and you realise that they're renting out your child to local pedophiles at an hourly rate, and you've got a dozen children. This happened here in New Zealand, in fact, a dozen children sleeping in bunk beds in a garage in a guy's house. Okay, and he was renting them out by the hour to local pedophiles. Okay, and my mate Dan Ryder, he took his truck, he took his winch, and he ripped the door off of that garage right in broad daylight, and he rescued those frickin' children.
Well, good for him. We have our next break, and we will come back. We've got another issue that connects to this. Broadcasting Network, Studio B. Today is October 17th, 2012, and we're on with radio talk show host Vinny Eastwood from New Zealand. And Vinny, one more thing that this, I just want to point this out, because this is something that a lot of people miss. I know you're an astute guy, and I know you're going to get this, but have you noticed how we've been indoctrinated? You're a westernized English-speaking country, just like the United States is, so therefore Hollywood and Hollywood-produced television has a large influence on your population as it does on ours. And that is, we've all been told by television and by movies that two things. Number one, never ever commit a crime, because they will catch you. They will spend billions of dollars in forensic evidence to whatever it is track you down, number one. And number two, do not do anything yourself. Sit back and wait and let the authorities do it. You know, if your child is kidnapped,
I'm back here.
If your child is kidnapped and being held by a pedophile, you are not supposed to do anything. You are supposed to let the authorities handle it. You're supposed to delegate your right to defend your family to the authorities, because you can't do anything, because if you do, that's vigilantism, and that's bad. So
it's taken the law into your own hands, and you can't have the law in the hands of the people, can you? That way, you don't have control over the people with your brutal dictatorship, police state, and corrupt judges. And speaking of the corrupt judges, there was even information coming out of a Los Angeles court, I think. It might have been San Diego, I forget which. But it was revealed that in the family court, they were actually getting certain dollar payments to the judges for the children that they would pawn off. You know, $20,000 for Hispanic, $30,000 for Black, $40,000 for white kids and blonde hair or something like that. It's like, holy cow! There's not only a heck of a lot of kidnapping and corruption going on, but there's also a shockingly large amount of money involved here. And, you know, the best way to mess with a businessman and make him hate you, mess with his cash supply.
Exactly. Well, the drug cartels make that very obvious here. And you may or may not know, but I am located in the central drug corridor from the Mexican border up to the U.S. And so we see this firsthand every day. And there was a Jewish family, five people. They were found in an SUV. They were all shot in the left temple, and then they lit their SUV on fire and burned the family up. So my And so you have to ask yourself, did they shoot themselves in the temple first, or did they set the SUV on fire first? I'm not sure about that, but it came out that the husband of the family was laundering money for the cartels and began to skim. So he got punished for that in a way to send a message to all of the other money launderers to don't mess with the cash flow of a cartel. But your point is well taken that
similar things happen to activists, yeah.
And similar things happen to activists. And those of us who speak out, and I just ordered a copy of the movie High Noon. And I did that because it reminds me of what you have to do. I recommend this to every person listening out there, to watch the movie High Noon with Gary Cooper and Grace Kelly. And it's, you know, Gary Cooper is the sheriff of a small town, and these guys are getting out of prison, and they're coming to kill him. And he has a choice either to stand up and fight, or he has the choice to be a coward and run away. And it's about how everyone he knows deserts him. Everyone turns his back on him. The woman he's due to be married to that day wants to abandon him because she doesn't want to see him killed. And it's just a heart-wrenching movie that what you have to do. And you can't be gutless. You can't be a coward. You have to stand up and tell these monsters, no, we're not going to take it. And if you touch my child, or you touch any child I know, I will hunt you down and kill you like the dog you are. And that's what people have to do, because we're getting to the point where the monsters are winning and the people are losing. And if we don't do something, no one else will. And we're up to our next break, and we'll bring this. We'll come back to this point in just a moment. Good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B. And today is October 17th, 2012. And we're on with talk show radio superstar Vinny Eastwood. Because, Vinny, you are one of the top of the heap here, coming from New Zealand. And the impact you have globally is just immense. But I want to go back to the comment about High Noon and about Hollywood and what it does and how we, as the Western people of the world, have been conditioned to do nothing, to run away, to let someone else handle the problems for us. Now, I have to be very careful here because I cannot advocate that people take extrajudicial means into their hands, so I will not advocate for extrajudicial means. But I will observe that the American people, and to a great degree the Western peoples of the world, have given away their freedom to defend themselves and their families. And one of the things that annoys the Western power elites is in the Muslim world, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, that these tribal leaders don't put up with this. If someone would rape a child in Pakistan, there would be severe consequences for it. In other words, the guy would have his head cut off and put on a pike, which is what should be happening here. And I think that's connected to why our Western elites are trying to agitate between the two cultures, because they don't want the Western sheep, the sheeple as we call them, to figure out that you do have power. That they don't want people to remember that they have personal power and they have a personal responsibility to their family and to their people, to their kin and kith, if you will, to eliminate people who would be pedophiles, who would kidnap your child, who would rape your child, who would carve your child up to sell the organs off. They don't want people to remember that. They want them to forget so that they can continue to do what they've been doing. And that's what I think is one of the big disconnects.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see it kind of as a predator protection, more or less. Even in a family group of gorillas or something like that, if a predator approaches and is threatening to steal some of the babies, they will either A, run away, or they will B, come together and beat the hell out of that jaguar or whatever it is that's trying to sink its teeth into their babies. And we've forgotten that, okay? We've been for lack of a better word, domesticated. To more pointedly put it, psychologically castrated. We've psychologically had that urge that men have to kind of go out there and just go, you know, and just kill and destroy and bash and smash everything that threatens it. Okay, any animal that approaches a human being that is acting in an aggressive fashion, in general, winds up getting exterminated. You know, even if it's a great white shark. After great white shark killings in Australia, for instance, there'll be huge amounts of boats that come out and they'll go hunting and they'll kill heaps and heaps and heaps of sharks and stuff like that. But we don't do that in our society because we think sharks are in the water.
No, they're on the land as well, and they're preying on our children, and they're preying on us. They prey on us every day, and you know, we've talked about a number of things, and I think you've really hit the nail on the head with your comment that we've been domesticated. That's it.
And it's happened over a long period of time. I don't know what it was like when you were a kid, Mike, but and then you think about what it was like for your grandparents, for instance, and the remarkable difference with how people would deal with things. And the best example that I can put across about the difference in society back then till now is you look at the Great Depression, first Great Depression, you know, 1920s through 30s. And back then, people had strong belief in God. They had strong family units. 90% of people lived in rural areas and grew their own food. People had were highly educated. People could repair their own clothing. People could build things. People could repair things. You know, that sort of thing. Today, 90% of people live in cities and don't grow their own food. Okay. 90% of people have very little understanding of how to take care of themselves in virtually any context outside of having all of these things absolutely available 24/7, got to have it now. Okay, very few people know what it's like to have to scrounge water from your roof, or to grow your own vegetables, or to go hunting, and all of these other things which would allow you to provide for yourself have since eroded away. Now, the real scary part here is that during the First Depression, with only 10% of people living in cities, still 10 million people starved to death in the United States. Today, and that's when 90% of people were, you know, growing their own food. You can imagine what it would be like today if we had a mega depression. And as far as I'm concerned, we're actually already in an economic depression. And what they're simply doing is attempting to cushion the blow by printing more money, which is actually not going to cushion the blow at all. It's in fact going to be the final hammer stroke that will destroy society once and for all and give people no alternative but to accept a global government, to accept a global currency, to accept a global bank. That's the agenda as far as I see. You get people off the land, you make them dependent, and then you provide the solutions to their problems, which they caused.
Well, I think you're correct on that, and I was going to make the same observation that back in the First Depression, people could survive because, you know, my grandparents, for instance, I mean, they warned me about this. My grandfather told stories when I was a child that during the Depression, he was making $18 a week, and he was only working every other week. But they got by because they could garden. They had a few livestock animals that they could butcher. But they got by. Now, today, in the city, people don't know food unless it comes out of a cardboard box. And how are you going to tell that person, how are you going to feed yourself when there's no cardboard boxes left in the food store? What are you going to do? And, well, first of all, there's going to be massive, massive civil unrest. People are going to get very, very nervous. And they're going to let that rage for a while, and they're going to let some people cull out, because they've been wanting to eliminate a portion of the population. There's been the concept of useless eaters for what, the last, you know, 100 years or so, I guess, since the eugenics movement started.
The term useless eaters was in fact coined, I believe, by Henry Kissinger in the 60s, I think.
Actually, I think it predates that. I think Kissinger was the one to really make
popularize it,
mainstream. He mainstreamed that term. But you look at this, and you look at how densely packed people are in in the cities, you look at how ill-equipped they are. I mean, in the U.S., we've got what's called a permanent underclass, we'll call it here. These people who have no skills, they're not very bright, they're not educated. You can't educate them because they can't read and write. They'll never learn. They don't have the intellectual horsepower to read and write. And it's one of the things that people forget is that half the people are below average. And you look at how stupid the average person is, and you realize half the people are below that. What's going to happen when there's no resources, there's no food, there's no water? How are these people going to react? It's going to be a violent explosion.
You know, I've got an answer. I've got an answer for that. They will do exactly whatever the authorities tell them is best for them, because they have submitted themselves to the appeal to authority paradigm, which is another logical fallacy. Oh, he's in charge, he must know what the heck is going on. I'm just a lowly person who's here in the street who can see everything clear as frickin' day, and I obviously don't have any idea what's going on. But the guy who's in a government building thousands of miles away, who's never been here, has never met me, he obviously knows my situation best, so I'm just going to trust him.
Well, I disagree, because in the U.S., we're such a much larger country, both, you know, geographically. I mean, the U.S. is a big country. It's very large. New Zealand's somewhat small. Our population is around 315 million. New Zealand, you're what, 5, 6, 7 million people total?
4 million in country, 5 million New Zealanders globally. About 20% of our population lives overseas.
I see. Okay. So you're a much, much smaller country. The state that I live in Arizona, has a population of 6.5 million. And so you look at how, multiply that by 50, and we've got a huge population, and we've got such a distrust and a distaste and a dislike for our government, and our minority populations in particular really, really hate government. A lot of them are minority. They're black, they're brown. They look at the government as being all white, and they look at the white as being their enemy and someone who they dislike, someone who they hate. Now, I'm talking in generalizations here, listeners, so don't beat me up on this later, because I know I have black and brown listeners out there, and I don't mean to offend anyone, but I'm just stating the obvious, that there is a lot of animosity towards white people in this country from that, you know, from minority communities, because whites have, in their opinion, held them down. And so now if you take away the food, you take away the water, you take away the social order, what happens? I do not look forward to the explosion that's coming in this country. It's going to be earth-shattering in the USA.
Well, can we relate this to other disasters that have happened in the United States where similar things have happened? Did that happen in Katrina? Because in my observations of the Katrina situation, I mean, everybody got it, most people got out like the government told them, and the people who didn't do what the government told them it was on TV, you know, they were stranded in their houses and stuff like that, anybody who went to the Superdome was basically stuck inside there like an arbitrary FEMA camp. And all the people out in the wealthier suburbs just wound up having their guns taken off them by Blackwater employees and stuff like that. But there wasn't really any civil unrest, even though such a disaster was imminent. So I'm not sure if that's the case.
No, I'm going to disagree with that there was a great deal of civil unrest. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes to discuss this.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear about that, yeah.
This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B. Today is October 17th, 2012, and we're on with special guest talk show sensation Vinny Eastwood. Vinny, welcome back to the show. And from the
Thanks,
U.S.
Brian.
Perspective, I don't know what was seen overseas in New Zealand. I don't know. But in the U.S., we saw massive looting, massive rioting. There were murders, there were rapes, there were all sorts of civil unrest. The situation inside the Superdome, which was, like I said, an impromptu FEMA camp, was absolutely atrocious. I couldn't think of a worse set of circumstances, and it was absolutely terrible. At least that was my impression of it. So, I don't know what
so you know. Let's take that emergency situation. Let's take that emergency situation and that reaction of the U.S. population and multiply it. Imagine a Katrina happened everywhere at the same time. It'd be chaos. The whole thing would be chaos, right? How did they restore order from that chaos in Katrina?
They did a very poor job of it, in fact, and getting relief supplies there was even a poor job. But they did it with military force is number one. As you pointed out, they had police, they had military, and they had Blackwater private contractors come in. And then they also offered relief. So you can be herded this way by you can confront the police and the military on one side, or you can go to the FEMA camp and get your formaldehyde infested trailer and a bottle of water and have a place to sleep for the night.
Mm-hmm. So this is again backing onto the dependence, and I'm reminded of the interview I did with Pastor Lindsay Williams, and how he said that Americans are not going to wake up. There ain't going to be a revolution. They're going to belly up.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but with the... Do they put fluoride in the water in New Zealand, too?
Yeah.
Okay, because they put fluoride in the water here, and fluoride in the water really... it slows you down. It makes you lethargic. And they've been 90% plus of the water supply in the USA has got fluoride in it, and... you know, I'd suggest people try to. There are techniques to remove the fluoride. I suggest people do that. But you may be right. You may not be right. But here's another thing. I think we're coming up to a perfect storm, because here's why. Number one, global grain supplies are at the lowest level they've been in the past 40 years. Absolutely, the lowest level they've been. And then you look at this financial Armageddon that the U.S. and the global economy is facing. So you have two things. You have no food, and you have no money, or money that's worthless, money that you get more value from if you burn it at the fireplace. So we've got those two things facing us. I don't think that the government can handle it. There's not enough of them. I don't think that they have enough relief. I don't think that they've built 300-plus FEMA camps, but that's a drop in the bucket. We have 315 million people here. I think we're going to have a civil war, civil unrest, like nobody's business in this country. I think it's going to be the bloodiest thing that's ever happened in the USA. And I think it's relatively imminent here. I just don't know when. I fear it. I fear it greatly.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, and this is another element that I'd like to explore is the fear paradigm. And as radio talk show hosts, we are exposed to the most terrifying possibilities that are ever imagined or conceived by man in this time today. But what I found is interesting is that you'll talk about how terrible things are, and then people will look out their window and they won't see it, kind of thing, because it's happening elsewhere, it's happening to somebody else, and they don't connect the dots that, oh my God, it's happening. It really is, and there's a fact-based analytical explanation for how it's happening, why it's happening, that kind of thing. And yet, we don't go out and start doing things. So here's how I look at it. If there was going to be a revolution in America, every time you went out driving, you would see somebody on the side of the road with a sign that said 9/11 was an inside job. Somebody on the other side of the road that says stop the chemtrail spraying. Somebody on the down the street a little bit with a sign that says end the Fed. Another guy down the other end of the street that says we've got to arrest the pedophile scum in CPS and what have you. I never see that when I'm driving around New Zealand, and I'm sure you never see that when you're driving around Arizona, mate. So the physical representation of a revolution is I think it's kind of like it has to dominate the public space before you can assume that it is, in fact, going to happen definitely. At the moment, I feel that we're growing. And incidentally, I'll be going down, I'll be traveling a couple of hundred kilometers down to another city, being transported by one of my listeners to help them do a chemtrail protest. I've got a number of banners and things like that, which listeners have sent me from their print shop down the South Island and things like that. and another supporter of mine has given me a 100 watt megaphone. So I'm naturally the front man behind the chemtrail thing. In fact, I'm the natural front man for everything here in New Zealand, because if you have a look at any of the other alternative media websites in New Zealand, like uncensored.co.nz or Investigate Magazine or Chemtrails North or Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective, you've probably never heard of these people, but you've heard of me. And you have a look at alexa.com, and I'm officially, as far as I've looked at the alternative media, number one here in New Zealand, because I cover such a wide, broad range of issues, but also because I've got an international audience. And this is because, as I've been told by many Americans, I know more about America than most Americans do.
Well, that's a good point, and I want to come back and talk about that chemtrail issue, because that's a hot one for me. Be right back in a couple of minutes. Stick with us, folks.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B. And today is Wednesday, October 17th, 2012. And we're on with radio talk show host from New Zealand, Vinnie Eastwood. And Vinnie, welcome back to the show. But, you know, I just want our listeners to understand this chemtrail issue is not an isolated issue to the USA. It's going on around the entire planet. And you look at how small New Zealand is. It's just not a very large country. It's an island chain, and yet it's still going on down there all around the world. And, you know, no one can figure out what they're spraying. We've got some theories, aluminum, barium, strontium, all these things. No one knows who's doing it, and no one knows why. So what sort of network does it take to globally coordinate such an effort?
Well, I'm not sure that global coordination is actually necessary. I think that most local problems can and should be solved locally. So you've got a plane that's flying from the United States to New Zealand, or Australia to New Zealand, or something like that. Does that mean you need to coordinate with some Australians in order to stop that plane from taking off and coming to New Zealand or to stop the chemtrailing here? Or is it more the fact that when you're here in New Zealand and you see that chemtrail spotted in the sky, you jump in your car, you run it, take a few banners, you run out onto a street corner that says, look up at the sky, look at that chemtrail, and then all of a sudden people start to become a little bit more awareness. And in fact, I think even a Swiss politician has even come out recently calling for an investigation into chemtrails and chemtrailing, that sort of thing. So I don't know what the solution is, and that's the real difficulty here. I know that the solution is not to do nothing, okay? So you do the direct opposite of whatever your enemy is doing. So firstly, do you hear about chemtrails on TV every day on the news? No. Okay, well then you've got to start talking about chemtrails all the time and make your own news channel and start putting this stuff up. I started doing that, and then all of a sudden I've gone... You know, I'll give you a demonstration here. I've been sent a stack of DVDs by Michael Murphy of the new film Why in the World Are They Spraying, which I'm going to hand out to people down there at the chemtrail protest. So it's just basically you've got to keep at them. Tyranny is a perennial problem, and the solution to this is eternal vigilance, constant fighting, constant battling. The difficulty is when you have long protracted wars of such a nature, of any nature, they are incredibly and inherently taxing and expensive. And fighting an information war, as we're getting into now, it has become a lot cheaper, a lot easier, and these are the new weapons of the day. The pen is mightier than the sword, and the camera and the microphone are now mightier than the pen.
Well, I tell you what, you talk about going on having a protest and a banner. I just as soon put a Russian S-400 battery in, and every time I saw a plane chemtrailing anti-aircraft battery, I'd like to lob a missile or two at him, bring a few of them down, and see if that doesn't have an impact on it. But
would just be used to demonize anybody who talks bad about chemtrails and use that one incident to amplify, and all of a sudden anybody who's got a chemtrail banner now and is trying to do something peaceful will automatically be seen as an incredibly dangerous, violent terrorist.
Well, but they're poisoning us. They're doing their best to kill off the people of this planet.
Oh, they are. But as Bernays said, it's about perception management, as Bernays said. And I'm of the opinion that we're in the media game. You've got to fight one war, and that's the media war. And perception management is the key. Propaganda can be used to tell lies and manipulate people's point of view. That's called black propaganda, by using lies to put a particular message across. What I'm interested in is doing white propaganda, is using the truth to put the message across to people. Now, I don't know whether or not I'll be successful. I don't have a clue if I am, in fact, capable by myself of doing all these things that I want to accomplish. In fact, I know that I can't, because you need listeners, you need sponsors, you need supporters, you need donators, you need all these other things, gas, pet, and food, and what have you, that you need to survive. But I'm having a great effect here, Mike, here in New Zealand, locally at least. The number one city in terms of visitors to my site is from Auckland, New Zealand, the same city where I am, even though there is no broadcaster in Auckland with the balls, pardon my French, and I apologize to the FCC regulations or affiliates for that mention.
Balls is okay. You can see, yeah. You can say that one.
As long as they're basketballs or softballs. Now, there's the other side of this element is, not only am I, it's kind of like my listeners are my guardian angel. You know what I mean, Mike? Whenever I need something, and I ask the listeners for it, invariably I get it. But I only ask for things that I really, really need. If I'm stuck and I need help, I ask for it. And most radio show hosts, they would rather, I don't know if this is a conscious thing, but they would rather live in complete abject poverty and do a lower quality broadcast and do less work rather than ask for donations or help so that they can do higher quality and do more work. And that's the only thing that I ever want from my listeners, is for them to give me the tools so I can do more, because there is not enough being done by me or by you or by anybody at the moment. There is still not enough being done. If there was enough being done, we would start seeing changes. We would start seeing a retraction of these international trade deals, of these fluorides in the water and things like that. And sure enough, it is happening in little isolated places here and there, but it's not an overwhelming groundswell as yet. And in my opinion, most people will not participate in the fight back. But I don't think that they need to, actually, because you look back through history, and in every single instance where a society has changed for the better, invariably it's actually been a very small, determined minority of people who will not give in, who will come up with creative solutions to all of these problems.
That brings up the point I'm trying to make, and that is the critical mass to affect change in any population is 3% of that population. So if you're in New Zealand, you're looking at, let's say, 6 million people who live in the country. You need 3% of those people to be committed. And once they're awake and committed to the process, you will get change. And the same thing in the U.S. We have a 315 million population. So it's a much larger number for us. But in New Zealand, at 3% of 6 million, that might be a manageable number where you could actually affect some meaningful change.
Well, that's true, but you have a look at the proportion of people that are already fighting in the United States. And in fact, to tell you the truth, Mike, it was Alex Jones and Infowars.com that woke me up to the situation in America. And then I started getting angry, depressed. I couldn't work anymore. I started becoming drug dependent because I had this terrifying new reality that I somehow had to digest. You know what I'm saying? And the way that I got to cope with that is I quit my job and I started going out almost on a daily basis to public meetings, protests, political events, things like that. Started interviewing the protesters with the microphones and the megaphones and getting the information. Because, you know, when you're seeing a news clip or something like that, you know how they got sound bites? Well, in New Zealand, yes. they're a bit shorter than that, and they're much, much worse. You know, it's very corrupt media over here that I've dubbed it the audio nibble. And what occurred to me is that if you give one of these really intelligent, incredible people 10 seconds on the news, they look like an idiot. If you give these intelligent people who know precisely what they're on about 2 hours on a radio show, suddenly it starts making a hell of a lot of sense, and you've got so much information, and you're like, wow, how come the media cut all that out? And it says, because it would have informed you, because it would have woken you up, because you would have understood the issue, because you would have been released from your fracking myopia. Okay, that's why they cut it out. If everybody was aware of the shockingly horrific Shiite Muslim going down, there would be a revolution by morning. But there ain't. And the globalists know this. And they've got intelligence agents and military personnel and all this sort of stuff all throughout the newsrooms, apparently, you know, producing the content and telling them which stories, passing around the talking points, Operation Mockingbird, which is a CIA program to get mainstream newscasters, even Walter Cronkite, in the fold so that they would release all of their information the way they want it to the American public and that kind of thing. So you've got intelligence agents, which have remarkably large amount more information to bear, making sure that the people who are listening to information don't get any.
Well, you know, you've just by recounting your experience and how you became involved in this by going out with a recorder and going out to public meetings, going out to public demonstrations with a bullhorn, a recorder, et cetera, you've just given all of our listeners a template for something they can each do. Everybody out there is capable of doing this. So we need to get everyone who's within listening earshot of this, start doing these things as Vinny just described, and we can make the change we want. Because if you can do it, you can attract 3 more people who can also help you with it, who will see it, it will make sense to them, they'll understand it. And it's really up to us. We have to get out and we have to communicate with each other as a population, as a nation, as a people of this planet about these things. And we can do it. There's nothing stopping us. They can't make us stop. And so,
I wanted to also say to Americans, you're not alone in this. I'm with you. There's a whole bunch of people in the UK and all over the world that have radio shows that are with you too. You're not alone. Okay, don't think that you have to solve this all yourself and take all the responsibility on your shoulders to defeat the global system of the New World Order, because it's everywhere. You cannot do this on your own. And also, I'm conscious of the fact that there's no other source in New Zealand that's kind of bigger than me on YouTube or radio or otherwise that's talking about this information. And what I'm doing essentially is I'm ensuring and taking responsibility for the alternative media in New Zealand by myself, okay? And trust me, I'm doing it all by myself. I'm doing all the editing. I'm doing all the recording. I'm doing all the producing of the radio show. I'm going out to all the protests. I'm filming all of the public meetings and all of that kind of stuff by my fracking self, okay? I'm an incredibly talented, incredibly energetic, real articulate mofo. I can do this. So I took the responsibility based on my skill set to go out and do this because I was a cracker salesman, okay, for 6 months doing telesales. I had like a 50% strike rate. It was a 50% shot. If I called you out of the blue, never hearing my name, never knowing the company I was working for, and I would be able to sell you. Okay? That's how freaking good I am at convincing people of stuff. And it's not that I was lying. It's because I'm telling you the truth in a way that you can comprehend it, right? So I'm a natural in this field. Most people cannot do what I'm doing. They simply cannot. However, I can't do a slave job anymore. I simply can't. I've had a couple of panic attacks related to going back to work. You know, Mrs. said, Vinny, you know, we're real low on money. You've got to go back into the workforce. You've got to go back to do sales. And my friend Jono offered me a job, you know, selling door-to-door insulation kind of inspections and stuff like that. There's a big government handout program going on now. And the night before, just comprehending me having to put on a suit and tie again and go out to these people that I don't know, having the burden on me with the commission and having a boss and selling products that I don't truly believe in and being part of a corporate structure. I started hyperventilating and freaking out and stuff like that. I can't do that anymore. Okay, so I don't have the luxury of stopping what I'm doing at any point. It may not have been my responsibility alone to bear to be New Zealand's alternative media, but I took responsibility for it anyway. And because I took responsibility for it, it now is my responsibility. Okay, whatever other possibilities of my life that were once there simply no longer exist. It's like I'm living in a an alternate parallel reality, and I look back on myself and think, who would I really have been if I was still working a slave job, if I was still just going out there selling other people's crap to people? You know, I couldn't imagine it. And now you have a look at, say, even the New Zealand mainstream media, okay, like New Zealand Herald. It's the equivalent of the New York Times in New Zealand, right? They have a very, very extensive YouTube channel. They've got thousands upon thousands upon thousands of videos, and they got like 3,500 subscribers. I've got 1,000 videos, and I've got 4,500 subscribers, and I'm getting more hits per day, per week, per month than they are. That is an entire mainstream media apparatus on a public forum like YouTube that by myself beating the pants off them because I have no fracking alternative, ladies and gentlemen. I will either fight and live, or I will sit back, be a slave, and I will die. That is as simple as the equation works out for me. There is no road back. There is only the road forward. There is no escape from the New World Order. There is only resistance to it, and you can resist it everywhere that you are. So stop sitting back and taking it in. Just get up. Just do something. As soon as you start doing something, you will be surprised at just how many mighty forces come to your aid, as Jack Blood says. It's like from day dot, as soon as people saw this guy, this big, tall, funny guy walking around, interviewing all the activists, getting all this information, putting it all up on YouTube, all of a sudden they were like, man, Vinny's really cool. Let's help him. Let's do this, that, and the other. All these collaborative partnerships formed, and I'm sweet ass.
Well, here we go for our next break, and we'll come back with our final segment, and I've got a question for you when we get back, so stick with us, folks. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Public Broadcasting Network Studio B. Today is Wednesday, October 17th, 2012, and we're on with the radio talk show sensation from New Zealand, Vinny Eastwood. Vinny, you've been a great guest. I really enjoyed having you. You give an inspiring message to the listeners. I mean, something very inspiring, more than just acquainting them with knowledge, but inspiration. So I'm going to state the obvious here, and the obvious is that we've got a psychopathic, parasitic,
predatory subspecies that lives among us as humans, as human beings, and they prey on us, and they've taken generations to build these control mechanisms to make us dependent upon them so they can dominate us. What's the last couple of minutes here? These are all yours. You have the open mic. I'm going to give it to you. You know, what's the best advice you can give people? That this last segment you just said was excellent. I really, really enjoyed that. But what closing words do you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, it depends. I've got a lot of advice to give, so because I'm multi talented, I'm kind of like Kim Jong Il, like that. so I can.
The North Korean guy, right?
Yeah.
I'm so lonely and completely alone.
Yeah. What knowledge can I impart in just a few minutes? I think automation. Okay. The internet allows you to broadcast yourself. Okay. So I encourage people to do that. But when you're doing it, you've got to develop a very simple methodology for doing it quickly, cheaply, so it you can do a maximum amount of content, maximum amount of quality with the minimum amount of time. Okay. And I've done this with my radio show, with my videos, and all of that kind of stuff. I figured out that it was really annoying, and I would simply not get videos up if I had to sit back and edit them and do this, that, and the other. So I just created a new platform called Mr. News Raw. So if you look up Mr. News Raw on YouTube, you will see hour-long, two-hour-long, three-hour-long videos of public meetings or protests or something like that, with me blaring on the megaphone for 20, 30 minutes or something of that nature. Now, I could edit all of that and spend an awful lot of time on it. But the fact of the matter is, I don't have that time. So I just put it all together, drop it in. I've got stock standard things like advertisements and intro and outro to the video. So it's a simple process. An hour and a half video takes me 2 minutes to make. and the same with the radio show. You come off air. And you'll see this today, Mike, as well. I'll have my archives up before RBN does, because I'm recording the live stream on my second Mac that's in the other room. So that as soon as we come off the broadcast today, I will be grabbing my flash drive. I will be grabbing that audio archive. I will be putting it into GarageBand. I will be uploading it to my website, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. On the archive sections so that people can hear it very soon after the broadcast. And the way that I've done this is essentially out of speed and proficiency, because I'm of the belief that it's all very well to do radio shows live and to have a live audience. But the reality is most people won't hear that live broadcast. And if it is archived, a lot more people are now capable of hearing it. Much like I give myself a capacity to do all these things, I also need to pass on that possibility, that knowledge and things like that to others.
That's what we want to do. Is we want to empower our listeners to become more active, to become more effective, because we need to hit the critical mass. We need to make the change that we need in this world, and that's why we're here. That's why I get up at 4:30 in the morning every day to do this show. Is to get our listeners empowered. And Vinny, I hear our background music coming up coming in on us. We're out of time, and thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
And have a great day.
I will.